Dan Jackson, W266DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Christopher Cruz. The Texas Supreme Court last night temporarily blocked a lower court ruling that allowed a woman from Dallas to get an emergency abortion. CBS News correspondent Michelle Miller has details.
Kate Cox is a 31-year-old mother of two. She's 20 weeks pregnant with what her doctor says is a non-viable pregnancy, and she's at risk or at high risk for multiple complications. A judge granted her an emergency order to end the pregnancy on Thursday, but Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton appealed the decision and argued that she had not demonstrated that she would suffer immediate and irreparable harm without an abortion.
The Palestinian Authority and aid groups are angry with the U.S. for its refusal to go along with a demand for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. CBS's Remy Innocencio has that from Tel Aviv.
On Friday, the U.S. vetoed a U.N. Security Council resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire, saying it was divorced from reality.
This text also failed to acknowledge that Israel has the right to defend itself against terrorism.
That was Deputy U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Robert Wood, who said halting military action would allow Hamas to continue to rule Gaza and, quote, only plant the seeds for the next war. Republicans in Congress are demanding tighter security at the southern border in exchange for consideration of a $110 billion Biden administration aid package for Israel and Ukraine. CBS News contributor Robert Berger in Jerusalem says that has Israeli leaders worried.
Israel is concerned by the delay in the U.S. aid package because basically it desperately needs it. The war has been dragging on for more than 2 months. And the Israeli military is running short on vital supplies, such as artillery shells and spare parts for U.S.-made warplanes.
There will be some nasty weather over the next few days in some parts of the country, says the Weather Channel meteorologist Kelly Cass on CBS Saturday Morning.
Down towards Pittsburgh, you've got the 95 corridor with temperatures in the 50s, so it's all rain. And then eventually the winds get really strong Sunday night into Monday, gusting as high as hurricane strength. And that's going to allow that cold air to come in on the backside, resulting in snowfall for the high elevations, the interior section of the Northeast.
Snow will fall in the Rockies and parts of the Midwest today before the storm heads east. Speaking to members of the Carpenters Union in Las Vegas, President Biden yesterday announced $8.2 billion in funding for new rail projects.
It means jobs, union jobs, 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 jobs.
That includes a high-speed system connecting Nevada and California. This is CBS News.
You don't need a job platform, you need a hiring partner. Indeed lets you schedule and conduct virtual interviews all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credit.
Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us.
When I first had my baby, I'd get comments all the time about how happy I must be. I remember thinking, I want to be happy. Why don't I feel that way? It was hard to admit that, even to my doctor. But I'm glad I did. She told me it was postpartum depression, and that is...
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw.
Cloudy this afternoon with a chance for scattered showers. Highs level off around 45. Southwest winds 10 to 20 miles an hour. Slight chance for scattered showers again tonight, 29. Tomorrow, highs around 33. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 41 degrees.
Your home of the Earl Ingram Show. Weekday mornings from 8 till 10 on The Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Don't worry about not hearing anything right now. It's there's an issue, as always.
When I first had my baby, I'd get comments all the time about how happy I must be. I remember thinking, I want to be happy. Why don't I feel that way? It was hard to admit that, even to my doctor. But I'm glad I did. She told me it was postpartum depression, and that is very treatable. These days, things are feeling good, and we're both happier about that. Right, little man? I'll take that as a yes.
Mental health care is working for Simone. See what it can do for you at mentalhealthcareworks.org. A message from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Christopher Cruz. The Texas Supreme Court last night temporarily blocked a lower court ruling that allowed a woman from Dallas to get an emergency abortion. CBS News correspondent Michelle Miller has details.
Kate Cox is a 31-year-old mother of two. She's 20 weeks pregnant with what her doctor says is a non-viable pregnancy, and she's at risk or at high risk for multiple complications. A judge granted her an emergency order to end the pregnancy on Thursday, but Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton appealed the decision and argued that she had not demonstrated that she would suffer immediate and irreparable harm without an abortion.
The Palestinian Authority and aid groups are angry with the U.S. for its refusal to go along with a demand for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. CBS's Remy Innocencio has that from Tel Aviv.
On Friday, the U.S. vetoed a U.N. Security Council resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire, saying it was divorced from reality.
This text also failed to acknowledge that Israel has the right to defend itself against terrorism.
That was Deputy U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Robert Wood, who said halting military action would allow Hamas to continue to rule Gaza and, quote, only plant the seeds for the next war. Republicans in Congress are demanding tighter security at the southern border in exchange for consideration of a $110 billion Biden administration aid package for Israel and Ukraine. CBS News contributor Robert Berger in Jerusalem says that has Israeli leaders worried.
Israel is concerned by the delay in the U.S. aid package because basically it desperately needs it. The war has been dragging on for more than 2 months. And the Israeli military is running short on vital supplies, such as artillery shells and spare parts for U.S.-made warplanes.
There will be some nasty weather over the next few days in some parts of the country, says the Weather Channel meteorologist Kelly Cass on CBS Saturday Morning.
Down towards Pittsburgh, you've got the 95 corridor with temperatures in the 50s, so it's all rain. And then eventually the winds get really strong Sunday night into Monday, gusting as high as hurricane strength, and that's going to allow that cold air to come in on the backside, resulting in snowfall for the high elevations, the interior sections of the Northeast.
Snow will fall in the Rockies and parts of the Midwest today before the storm heads east. Speaking to members of the Carpenters Union in Las Vegas, President Biden yesterday announced $8.2 billion in funding for new rail projects.
It means jobs, union jobs, 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 jobs.
That includes a high-speed system connecting Nevada and California. This is CBS News.
You don't need a job platform. You need a hiring partner. Indeed lets you schedule and conduct virtual interviews all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credits.
Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media?
And in particular, we're going to talk about something called the Unitary Executive Theory. The Unitary Executive Theory, this notion that the president has expanded powers not only under the Constitution, but under the very ways in which government operates on a routine basis. In that connection, we're also going to be going back and talking a little bit about some of the Supreme Court cases in this area as well, focusing upon this thing called the administrative state. This concept that it's also packaged into Project 2025, this notion of a unitary executive that attacks our federal agencies, that suggests that the experts, the scientists, the mathematicians, the people inside these agencies, the people of expertise in all the different areas of our lives, education, healthcare, economics, construction, engineering, and yes, indeed, law, all of those folks may in fact be suspect. We're going to talk about the ways in which the Supreme Court right now, on three cases that we've already discussed to some extent, how those cases fit into this overall design, that the presidential candidate, Donald Trump, is articulating on the campaign trail these days. Again, inside Project 2025, Unitary Executive Theory, all of that coming up in our second hour. In our first hour, we're going to be talking about other rule of law issues, and in particular, focusing upon a whole series of significant charges, a whole series of different cases that were charged by, yes, that's right, grand juries throughout our nation just this past week and in the week prior to that, both federal grand juries and in one case, a state grand jury. What is the point of all that? Why are we talking about all those kinds of things? It is a reaffirmation in many, many different areas of our lives and our livelihoods of the ways in which the rule of law does and should work in America. This notion that an executive, a president, a governor, a mayor, even members of legislative branches around our country do not have the authority to charge, certainly federally, and in many cases, state cases, that's reserved, again, for the criminal justice system. And in particular, in the cases we're talking about this morning, we're going to focus upon the grand jury process once again, the ways in which people in our nation, our communities, are called in to assess the evidence presented to them about the potential for returning charges, whether there's probable cause or not, to determine the evidence supports a finding at that level that a crime may have been committed or a series of crimes. I'm going to talk more about that mechanism, that grand jury process, in no less than five different cases. You've heard of some of these already, some of them probably not, but all discussing, all focusing upon this notion of the importance of a system that has a check and a balance on it. And that check and balance are the people of the United States of America. Those are the people who comprise grand juries. Those are the people who ultimately give power to our law enforcement agencies to return not only charges, but also to prosecute those cases afterwards. So a great affirmation this morning on this, our 75th broadcast, about the rule of law, the positive things, even in the midst of the human tragedies of criminal prosecutions. And then in our second hour, stay tuned for that. In our 10 o'clock hour, discussion of this plan, these proposals, this Project 2025 articulated by presidential candidate Donald Trump. We're going to talk about those again through the prism, through the lens of law and government and justice in America. What is possible? What isn't possible? And how does one accomplish these things if indeed one wants to dropkick? One wants to disregard the fundamental trappings of the rule of law. We'll chat about all of that. We're going to continue that discussion next Saturday as well on the 17th. So this is just the beginning in our second hour. This morning, delighted to have you with me for all of this important discussion. And by you, I mean stations throughout the state of Wisconsin here on the Civic Media broadcast family. And that includes WMDX in Madison. That includes WXCO in Wausau, of course, WAUK right here in Waukesha, WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, WRCE Richland Center, WLAK in Amory, WISS in Oshkosh, WGBW in Green Bay, WBZH in Hayward, WRJN in Racine, WLCX in La Crosse, and yes, that's right, in Eau Claire, W228EP, The Tap, 93.5, in Eau Claire. All of you, thank you for joining me this morning. Our broadcast is also rebroadcast, as you all know, on Sunday mornings, the same time period. And yes, indeed, this morning, as always, you can participate in our conversation about all of these important topics affecting America, affecting the state of Wisconsin, affecting the community in which you live by calling in that phone number. Anya is on the phones, and I am also here to take those questions, those comments in particular, about the subjects that we're discussing this morning. That phone number is 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789, and Anya is always very appropriately prompt to tell me that you can also send us notes and comments, and especially encouraging your questions about things that are either puzzling or not clear, or you simply want more exposition on when it comes to how things work, how the rule of law works. You can also go online, find us, Civic Media, find your particular broadcast station, pull down the Morning Cannolis folder, and send Anya and me a note. Send us a question in particular, and we will take those as well. Delighted, as always, to have your input into our Saturday morning broadcast. As always, throughout all of these important topics this morning, the broadcast coming up next Saturday as well, and all mornings on this, the Civic Media broadcast stations, we ask three important questions. Specifically, what happened? What do we know about the facts of things that are out there? What has actually been proven, established, so that we can state with some reliability that we know about the important things that are going on in these areas of law and government? Second, why are those things important? Why are they significant? Why should we care about those important things? Of course, we should always care about our government and about law, and especially about the aspiration for justice. Why are they particularly important in this time in American history? Focusing on that more and more. Why are they relevant? Why are they material? And why it is we should all be focused upon the facts as we know them, understanding what happened in our lives. And then finally, in many instances, not always, but many instances, what should we do? What kinds of things should animate us to engage in activities, question more, engage with government more, engage with each other more on these important issues always before us? Those three important questions: what happened? Why are those things important? And what should we do about them? All of those animating our discussion this morning of these rule of law issues, topics, events of just these past couple of weeks. And then, and again, in our second hour, this focus upon the promises, the commitments that are being made right now by presidential candidate Donald Trump as he campaigns to return to the White House. We're going to talk about those in the lens, through the lens of the rule of law here on our Saturday morning broadcast. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for being a part of that all-important discussion. Let us begin. Let us begin by talking about a series of no less than five significant cases charged just this past week. Some of them you've heard about, some of them you have not heard about. All of them underscoring once again the ways in which government should work, the ways in which we charge cases under the Constitution of the United States of America. James Madison wrote in the Constitution the mechanisms by which we have a government. And then, as we know, in the first Congress, following the passage of the Constitution, established the Bill of Rights. And among those Bill of Rights provisions, the guarantees to protect the rights of every single American, the right to a grand jury indictment, if at all. And what that means, of course, is a presentation to people pulled in from the communities, whether it is in 1789 or 2023 or 2024, people called in from the communities who have the not only capacity, the intellectual capacity, the focus capacity, the commitment to our nation to review the evidence presented to them by prosecutors, by investigators, to make the determination in their ambit, their responsibility to decide whether there is a sufficient basis to return charges. Not done in our federal system by an executive branch, not done by a legislative branch, by people in the community. In the federal system, of course, as we know, people who are 26 in number, convened in all of the different districts around the country, including right here in the eastern and western districts of Wisconsin. When we come back, we're going to talk about what some of those grand juries have done just this past week when it comes to charges in America. Stay with us for this very important discussion here on our Saturday morning broadcast.
Listening to The Shaw, WAUK.
Hi, I'm Emily from Weikert Realtors Lake Point in Madison. Your home, your property, your decision. At Weikert Realtors Lake Point, we'll guide you every step of the way, whether you're buying or selling a home or exploring commercial property. Your dream is within reach. You'll find our realtors love what they do, and more importantly, we think it's fun helping our clients achieve their goals. Who wouldn't want to do that every day? Give me a call at 608-721-8002. Weikert Realtors Lake Point, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find more info at weikert-lakepoint.com.
There's excitement surrounding Carroll University basketball this year. Head coach Lindsey Schultz and the Pioneer women are fired up to deliver another winning season in the CCIW. You can catch all the action of every Carroll women's home game right here. Join Don Brown as he takes you from tip-off through all the game excitement on the Shaw, WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, and the Civic Media app.
The Shaw, WAUK.
Just trying to find some peace.
We are back here at our Saturday morning broadcast. Thank you once again for joining me for this, our discussion of the significant events and circumstances, news stories of just this past week, and a bit beyond that, having to do with major charges issued by federal grand juries just in the past 7 to 10 days or so. Among those, this is grabbing headlines, of course, because it involves the son of the president. And here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media, we talk about all of these things because it's important to know about them. This is involving Hunter Biden. And just this past week, a federal grand jury charged Hunter Biden Thursday of this past week with a significant scheme to evade federal taxes on millions of dollars in income from foreign businesses. And this, of course, being the second indictment against him this year from a grand jury. It's a major new development, obviously, with respect to Hunter Biden's legal woes that are out there. The charges that are filed in a district court in California, of course, come from a federal grand jury. And as I said right before the break, what is a grand jury? It is people brought together to convene and to review evidence presented to them by federal investigators, sometimes state investigators as well. It is a non-public proceeding. It's a private proceeding. Why? Because we want to make certain that those grand jurors are not subject to public pressure, media, polls, those kinds of things that animate much of our lives. We want to make certain that they're focused in the privacy of their own deliberation on what the facts are and make the determination, if at all, that there is probable cause to believe that a particular crime or sets of crimes have in fact been committed. This particular grand jury has returned three counts of each of tax evasion, having to do with the evasion of a tax assessment in particular, a failure to pay and to file taxes, and filing a false or fraudulent tax return. That's according to a 56-page indictment. And also it describes along the way in what is plainly a talking indictment as well, not only describing the particular tax charges against Hunter Biden, but also describing the personal indulgence, that's the only way it can be described, of this that has schemes and aspects of it in all areas of our life, alleging in particular between 2016 and October 15th of 2020, Hunter Biden spent money on drugs and escorts and various other things like luxury hotels, rental properties, exotic cars, clothing, other items of personal nature. In short, basically, according to the grand jury indictment, everything but paying his taxes. We know that this particular charge also comes about 5 months after he appeared to be on the verge of a broad plea agreement that would have accomplished his avoiding some jail time and potentially have granted him some broad immunity. Basically, a decision by all the parties, if this had gone through, not to charge him with other things, at least not to expose him with the kind of exposure that he now has as a result of this indictment and another. That agreement collapsed, as we all know, in September. He was indicted after that in Delaware on three charges stemming from his illegal purchase of a handgun in 2018, a period when, again, by his own admission, implicitly, if not explicitly stated in all of these grand jury indictments, that he was also using drugs heavily and was prohibited again during that period of time from owning a handgun. So there are two discrete grand juries that have returned indictments in this particular case. The tax charges have always been the more serious of the two. And in many ways, the reason why the case fell apart when it was in front of the Delaware judge is because it became clear during the course of the proceeding there for the judge to entertain the possibility of her accepting the plea, going ahead to schedule this all on for sentencing, became clear that the parties did not have a clear agreement. The contract, if you will, the criminal contract between them was not clear. And she said, go back and do this again. Try to come back to me with a plan if you've got one. And that never happened. We do not know about the negotiations that followed those events back in the summertime coming out of Delaware. But we do know that in the wake of that, not only this gun indictment of a number of weeks ago, but also now, just this past week, this major indictment alleging tax fraud. All of this, again, widely known, the tax issues themselves, the actions track fairly closely. Many of the things that have been in the media about the behavior of Hunter Biden. And in that connection, as we always do, we should hasten to add and underscore with great clarity that these charges, like all charges against all defendants out there coming out of a grand jury, what are they? They are charges. They are allegations. They are not proof positive. That happens only when there is a trial before what's called a pettit jury or a trial jury. And they then determine whether these particular charges, now returned by probable cause, have been established by the government beyond a reasonable doubt. So you go from this lower standard to a higher standard. And that's what will happen here. Hunter Biden is presumed innocent until he is proven guilty. And at that time, a judgment can be entered against him. A sentence can be imposed and other things post-conviction, if at all, if that happens by a trial jury, but presumed innocent. And the point behind that, not only in this Hunter Biden case, but in all the other cases we've talked about, including at least four others we're going to chat about this morning, is that the defendants are presumed innocent. They are presumed innocent and that right attends them. Throughout the process, that includes everybody else we've talked about on this morning broadcast, including the two major federal cases pending against a presidential candidate named Donald Trump, former president named Donald Trump. Those cases, of course, coming out of a D.C. grand jury, alleging in four counts this major case that may be going to trial in front of Judge Tanya Chutkan in March of this coming year, alleging election interference. Four counts. One defendant in that case. A lot of focus on that, only related to the orders limiting the defendant and what he can say and not say, but also these recent determinations that he is not immune from those kinds of prosecutions. That prosecution, just like the Hunter Biden prosecution and the others that we will talk about this morning, the lesson here, the civics lesson here in our morning broadcast is they all derive from the same process. Yes, different districts, different grand juries, but all of them, 26 people from the community convened for the purpose of getting together. They serve typically for 18 months. Those periods of time can be extended. They typically meet in most districts at least twice a month to review evidence of this kind, but they all do the same thing. Reviewing evidence, soliciting evidence, they can issue subpoenas, they hear testimony, they review documents, and the process by which the Hunter Biden indictment just this past week was returned is the same process by which Donald Trump and many others in our federal system every week, almost every day in America, are likewise indicted, an indictment having been returned by a grand jury. There is, as we'll see in just a moment or so, a process by which a U.S. attorney can charge by criminal complaint an individual, but that's a limited authority. And that only lasts for 30 days, after which a U.S. attorney, assistant U.S. attorneys need to go back into a grand jury and seek an indictment. If they don't do that under the Constitution, if that 30-day passes without having presented these matters to a grand jury, the charges cannot go forward. There are ways of extending that somewhat, but the reality is that our Constitution contemplates precisely this mechanism that this past week resulted in an indictment against the president's son. He's facing a maximum of 17 years imprisonment for those charges. When we come back, we're going to talk more about other grand juries throughout our nation, including those that relate to international and domestic events and circumstances both. Stay with us for that discussion. Goodbye.
Walk.
Waukesha, home of Les Paul, our awesome farmers market, and The Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. The Texas Supreme Court has put on hold a lower court ruling allowing Kate Cox to get an emergency abortion. Molly Duane of the Center for Reproductive Rights.
The judge today was quite clear that she intends her order to protect Mr. Cox, as well as Dr. Carson and any staff that is acting to facilitate care for Ms. Cox.
The U.S. has vetoed a proposed U.N. Security Council resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas war. Palestinian U.N. envoy Riyad Mansour.
It is beyond regrettable. It is disastrous that the Security Council was again prevented from rising to this moment.
Nasty weather in the Rockies in the Midwest today and tomorrow in the Northeast, says the Weather Channel meteorologist Kelly Cass on CBS Saturday morning.
Those winds, they are going to be really strong, especially for the 95 corridor, and that means airport delays.
CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Don't change the station, but do watch out for deer, would ya? You know, they're running around all willy-nilly. It is the Krebscast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Badgers took off for Arizona. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Wisconsin Badgers headed out to Arizona yesterday. They're going to take on the number one team in college hoops, the Arizona Wildcats. The tip-off today in Tucson at 2:15. Wisconsin ranked 23rd in the state now after those wins last week Saturday against Marquette, later this week against Michigan State. But Greg Gard asked, is there any way they can improve their shots at the foul line at practice during the week?
You know, and you can practice those things, and we've done every drill imaginable. It's still about performing when the lights are on, the pressure's on. All of them are good enough free throw shooters to make it when the gym's empty. You got to do it when, you know, the game's on the line and everybody's watching, the cameras are rolling. So that, from that standpoint, getting there is probably priority number one.
College volleyball, the Wisconsin Badgers women's team, now in the Elite Eight, a part of the NCAA National Tournament. They beat Penn State the other night, 3-1. Tonight, they face off against Oregon. That game gets started at 7 o'clock. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw.
Cloudy this afternoon with a chance for scattered showers. Highs level off around 45. Southwest winds 10 to 20 miles an hour. Slight chance for scattered showers again tonight, 29. Tomorrow, highs around 33. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 39 degrees.
Latrell spent more than 8 years in foster care. His world changed when he was adopted at 15. With help from the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption.
I think about how much we love him, and I wish we could have had him for his entire childhood.
The foundation is changing the lives of thousands of teens waiting in foster care. You can help. Learn more at DaveThomasFoundation.org.
One in four Americans today are living with a disability. I'm one of them. People with disabilities are extremely talented, resilient problem solvers that have so much to offer. And we've got a trusted ally on our side, an organization we can rely on, Easter Seals. Easter Seals is leading the way to full equity, inclusion, and access to healthcare, employment, and education for people with disabilities, families, and communities. That's my Easter Seals. Make it yours.
Learn more and get involved at EasterSeals.com.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Whether you're heading down Les Paul Parkway or fighting traffic on the interstates, this is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
We are back on our Saturday morning broadcast. Thank you once again for joining me and joining Anya. Taking your phone calls as always as 844-967-2789. Also taking your notes and comments and specifically your questions about the subject matters that animate our show this morning. We're talking about grand juries this morning. This one that just this past week indicted the president's son, Hunter Biden. No indication, no reference, no mention in any of those indictment pages to the president himself. This is fairly clearly a set of allegations against the defendant, Hunter Biden himself. This is not the omnibus look that the United States Congress and the House of Representatives in particular is trying to explore with respect to the president. This is not that, although it's the avenue by which members of the House of Representatives seem to believe that there might be a basis upon which to impeach the president. There is not. And as a rule of law, as a matter of process and procedure, an indictment against an individual here, again, plainly cannot be and should not be prosecuted by legislators, prosecuted by the U.S. Department of Justice. And while the Congress does have authority in certain oversight areas, it is quite clear from the indictment here, stunning as the allegations are, significant as they are, material as they are against Hunter Biden, they do not reach to the president himself. No allegations that our chief executive himself was involved in any of the activities, the events, all tax related, having to do with Hunter Biden. Hunter Biden probably going to trial or perhaps reaching some negotiated resolution. That's sometime during the coming year when we know as well this coming year, 2024, is also going to be a time of campaigning. We have got primaries here in the state of Wisconsin, other places around the nation. We have got conventions coming up in Milwaukee and Chicago in July and August of this year. All of this almost certainly happening while trials before trial juries are going to be happening with respect to the former president on those two federal cases, one of them involving the insurrection, the attempt to overthrow the government, election interference on January 6th. The other one related to the Mar-a-Lago documents, that's still pending in South Florida. Those are the two federal cases. Also, once again, the product of this grand jury process. Those cases may or may not be tried during the course of this coming campaign period. Probably the first of those in front of Judge Chutkan. She seems to be quite committed to going ahead with that trial. So that will happen. Again, coming out of the same process of the grand jury review and analysis and a return of indictment, if at all, based upon probable cause, all of that now going ahead in front of the trial juries, which are significantly our public proceedings. Federal courts, Chief Justice has not yet amended the rules in such a way that there can be cameras in federal courts, but nonetheless can be open to the public and certainly subject to our consumption, our understanding of what is going on. What other cases are out there from just this past week, also underscoring this process of grand jury review and return, a variety of different areas, different topics, beyond taxes, beyond insurrection, beyond documents. This one having to do with an announcement made on Monday by the U.S. Department of Justice that a retired State Department official who worked for decades as a secret agent for Cuba had been identified and is now the subject of a criminal complaint. And yes, this is the process by which a U.S. attorney can, in fact, respond promptly, even before going to a grand jury, to get that person charged, to get that person into the system. That's what was announced by federal prosecutors just on Monday and by the attorney general himself. And in particular, this particular allegation, the defendant, his name, this former diplomat, his name Manuel Rocha, R-O-C-H-A, had secretly aided Cuba's clandestine intelligence gathering mission against the United States. That's according to the indictment returned by a grand jury there since at least 1981. And he rose to the ranks after that. The State Department worked briefly in a top White House role. And all of this, as Rocha is now 73 years old, appear to have met with some handlers from Cuba's spy agency as recently as 2017. All that according to prosecutors bringing forth this criminal complaint, which again will be presented in many ways to a grand jury sometime soon, anticipating their review and their determination whether or not probable cause exists to continue with this prosecution. According to the complaint, according to the statements made by federal prosecutors, Mr. Roca boasted that he had spent 40 years spying on behalf of the communist government in Havana and strengthened the revolution. Those are the words from the criminal complaint. For more than two decades, he handled matters related to Latin America in a series of roles at the State Department under a couple of different presidents, Bill Clinton and also George Bush. He also had a small stint as an ambassador to Bolivia from 2000 to 2002. He was a native and is a native of Colombia. He grew up in New York. Mr. Roca served as an advisor to the U.S. military command that includes the Cuba region from 2006 to 2012. Attorney General Merrick Garland, at the time of the announcement of this complaint, and again anticipating its presentation to a grand jury sometime soon, said this. He said, this action exposes one of the highest reaching and longest lasting infiltrations of the U.S. government by a foreign agent. He said that Mr. Roca had sought out employment with the U.S. government that would provide him with access to non-public information and the ability to affect U.S. foreign policy. He did appear just this past Monday in a federal courthouse in Miami pursuant to that criminal complaint, again anticipating all parties do that this will be presented to a grand jury as soon as perhaps this coming week. He testified or stated during the course of that proceeding about his position here, obviously pleading not guilty to the criminal complaint. He will return, if indeed the grand jury returns an indictment here, he'll return to a federal court to return to respond to the allegations in the criminal indictment as well. Along the way, the prosecutors indicate as well that in the course of this process, this alleged compromise of our intelligence status here, this intelligence gathering mission on behalf of Cuba, that according to the prosecutors, Manuel literally had the keys to the kingdom. And if it had to do with Cuba, he got to see it. So potentially a huge compromise in our safety, our security from an intelligence standpoint with respect to Cuba. He is now in custody and plainly, again, will be the subject of further proceedings once a grand jury reviews the criminal complaint and the information supporting that, and likely returns a grand jury indictment, prompting the formal initiation of that case in the federal district court there in South Florida. Yet another matter that has an international aspect to it. This too coming out of a federal grand jury. Justice Department saying just on Wednesday, again, through the Attorney General and others, that it has charged four Russian soldiers with torturing an American living in the area of Kherson in Ukraine, or the war-ravaged part of that nation, using a war crime statute for the first time since it was enacted about three decades or so ago. The indictment, again, returned what? By a grand jury reviewing the evidence of these war crimes alleged against four Russian soldiers, unsealed just this past week in Virginia, could be followed by other charges against Russians who have committed similar atrocities. Again, the Attorney General talking about those atrocities, largest scale in any European armed conflict since the Second World War. He's describing the atrocities identified in this now released grand jury indictment. For the first time, the Attorney General also acknowledged along the way, while we're talking about and focusing upon these four Russian soldiers charged with war crimes against an American there, also acknowledged that the department has begun a formal investigation of the murder of more than 30 Americans by, yes, that's right, Hamas. Hamas fighters during the October 7th attack in Israel, and indicating that that investigation is also underway. That has not yet resulted in a criminal complaint, a criminal indictment, but acknowledging the same kind of thing also under federal investigation by the Department of Justice, plainly focusing upon what? The conduct by foreign nationals against Americans. In this case, as Attorney General Garland indicated, the murder of more than 30 Americans on October 7th, and of course, sparked, initiated the horrific war right now between Israel and Hamas going on in the Middle East. All four of the Russians in the seminal case, the case that really brought the attorney general's attention, America's attention by the attorney general, all four of those now live in Russia. So it is unlikely. It is unlikely that they will anytime soon be appearing in a federal district court in Virginia or other places around the country. And the prospects, of course, that they would travel here voluntarily to return to this, to our country, to appear in our country on the return of this grand jury indictment, to plead guilty or not guilty to it, probably very unlikely. But if they are captured at some point down the road, the Department of Justice, once it comes to indicting through the grand jury process, those cases are not dismissed. And sure enough, you hear from time to time, including just this past year, cases where an indictment from 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, still on the books, still viable, no statute of limitations problem once the case is charged. And every so often when a defendant appears in a federal court because she or he has been apprehended, even years after the charges have been returned by a grand jury, that happens in America. And so this indictment will not go away, even though the prospects for immediately these four Russian soldiers to appear in a federal court in America are unlikely. The allegations in this, also a speaking indictment, are horrific. They are absolutely horrific. They describe the time of the victims, roughly 10 days in captivity by these Russian soldiers, the Russian armed forces, and some paramilitary units within the so-called Donetsk People's Republic. They apparently beat him brutally with their fists and the butts of their guns, threatened to sexually assault him. In one harrowing episode, again described in this indictment, according to the prosecutors, they hauled this particular victim, an American, from the building where he'd been held captive to stage a mock execution. Ended when a bullet was fired inches from his temple as he knelt on the ground. The two commanders, the two of the four, were identified by name in this indictment, along with two subordinates identified only by their first names, apparently subjected this man to two particularly vicious interrogation sessions. They stripped him naked, they photographed him, and they accused him of being an American government operative, repeatedly taunted him with death threats, and told him a good night through an interpreter after warning him that he was about to be put to sleep. All of that and more set forth in this harrowing indictment, disclosed into the public domain just on Wednesday about the activities of these four Russian soldiers in Kherson in Ukraine, just as the war was beginning, more than a year or so ago. Again, in the context of that announcement of that criminal indictment, also focusing on the attorney general's remarks that similarly, war crimes being looked at with respect to the murder of more than 30 Americans by Hamas fighters on October 7th, entirely possible, given the likelihood that that case also being presented to a grand jury, that a grand jury indictment could be returned in that matter as well. A second instance just this past week of how the grand jury process works in everything from tax cases to voting, undermining the voting of America, to documents cases, to, in this case, war crimes. Jurisdiction, again, by virtue of the fact that you have got American citizens who are the victims of these plots to undermine their solidarity, their security, their safety as human beings on the face of this planet. Let's talk about yet another instance of that, almost as harrowing. This one did not come to fruition. But again, as we know in the law, an attempt to commit a crime is just as much a crime as the crime itself. This particular crime, described as a New York hit job with some international implications, a fairly audacious assassination plot against a Sikh separatist. How does this come about? The target was a lawyer. The intended victim that's described in this Manhattan indictment just released about 10 days ago was a lawyer in a New York-based group called Sikhs for Justice. And this American citizen, he's an outspoken proponent of independence for the northern Indian state of Punjab. A lot of familiarity of my own and certainly many of you as well for the Sikh population. We know very much that our own Sikh community right here in Wisconsin, the victims in the community certainly individual families and others. And we're going to talk more about how those events are related to this assassination plot in New York when we come back on our Saturday morning broadcast.
This is the Shaw, WAUK.
Timeout.
All right. Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
I was proud to be a soldier.
I told the truth and got kicked out.
And so I thought to myself, I'm taking this rule down.
If you're an LGBTQ plus veteran, your memories are important too. Share your story with the Library of Congress Veterans History Project, where firsthand accounts from U.S. military veterans are preserved and made accessible for researchers and future generations. Visit loc.gov/vets to submit your stories, photographs, and documents today.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK.
And we are back on our Saturday morning broadcast. And this is our final segment of the first hour of our show this morning, talking about how the grand juries in America review evidence and then return what are called indictments. These are the formal charges, not findings of guilt, no judgments entered here. That only happens after a trial or a petit jury determines whether there is proof beyond a reasonable doubt. At the grand jury level, probable cause is the standard. And again, we're reviewing this morning a number of different cases in which grand juries around the nation have made those determinations and now released those charges into the public domain for pretrial proceedings, for trial proceedings, and if convictions happen, post-trial proceedings as well. This particular case coming out of a Manhattan grand jury. Again, as I indicated right before the break, a fairly audacious plot involving a New York-based group called Six for Justice. And in particular, the target of the plot was identified by American officials in this indictment as an individual named Gurpatwant Singh Panum, P-A-N-N-U-M. He is a general counsel for something called Six for Justice. And Punjab, and that's the area in a sort of northwestern India, where there's an advocacy for the creation of a sovereign state for Six, called, or would be called, Khalistan, K-H-A-A-L-I-S-T-A-N. And again, the subject of a lot of discussion, a lot of advocacy, even sometimes protests about the need to create from the Sikh position this separate sovereign state there. Gurpatwant Singh Panum, general counsel for one of the groups called Six for Justice, advocating for the creation of that sovereign state in India. And what happens here? The plot is to assassinate him here in the United States of America. The man planning the assassination hired a hitman who was, in fact, working, yes, that's right, for the American government. This scheme, this assassination plot, again, targeting Mr. Singh Panum, came to view just recently, again, as this indictment was released, charging an Indian national. His name is Nikhil Gupta, with murder for hire and conspiracy to commit murder for hire. All of that, again, charged here in the United States of America, identifying plainly a potential did not happen here. It was stopped because, in this particular case, the focus of the activity involved an undercover agent. And so thankfully, no assassination happened here. An unsuccessful plot against this Sikh separatist attorney. Nonetheless, still a crime under federal law, under American law. The plot was no empty threat. It was plainly linked to this June killing of another Sikh separatist in Canada. You have heard all about that. An awful lot of focus there in Canada about allegations that a death and assassination that did in fact take place there, brought to the attention of the world by the prime minister there, and identifying operatives in the Indian government who may have been responsible for that. causing, as you well know, an awful lot of rift between the Canadian government and the Indian government itself. The Indian government, for its part, has denied any involvement in that Canadian event, also denied any involvement in this particular event involving this Nikhil Gupta. Nonetheless, allegations that somehow he was acting on behalf of the Indian government in attempting to assassinate this advocate, this lawyer here in America who was advocating internationally for the creation of Khalistan, again, this separate Punjab area in India, for the creation of a Sikh state. All of that, again, we hasten to add, all of these individuals presumed innocent, right? Before they're proven guilty, if at all, by a federal trial jury. In front of that jury would have to return that. But that pending indictment, again, by probable cause, a finding coming out of a grand jury that this assassination attempt was made here in the United States of America with respect to an American advocating for these events overseas in the nation of India. We will see, like all of these cases, how this plays out as those cases go to trial. And that, too, is a process, the rule of law, which we talk about on a regular basis here on our Saturday morning broadcast. And finally, this comes out of a grand jury, not in the federal system, but again, many states have grand jury systems as well. And sure enough, just this past week, coming out of Reno, Nevada, under a Nevada grand jury on Wednesday indicted six people who submitted certificates to Congress falsely declaring that Donald Trump was the winner of the 2020 presidential election in their state. And this makes, of course, Nevada the third state in our nation, in addition to Michigan and also Georgia, that has criminally charged individuals as fake electors, people who have come forward representing in documents that they are the proper electors on behalf of Donald Trump, making this representation, sending those off or attempting to get those into the well of Congress on January 6th as a means of undermining the proper and appropriate votes entered by Americans, the Electoral College votes being counted on that day. Coming out of Nevada, the third state in our union to identify these individuals and to charge them criminally. The attorney general at the time, his name is Aaron Ford, said we cannot allow attacks on democracy like this to go unchallenged. The fake electors there who involved with the state Republican Party and also the Clark County Republican Party have been charged with offering a false instrument for filing and uttering a forged instrument. Those are the charges in Nevada under state law, again, coming out of a grand jury there. The two categories of felonies have penalties that range from 1 year to either 4 or 5 years in prison. All of those significant penalties. We know as well that Michigan's attorney general has also filed federal felony charges in July against six Republican fake electors. They also face criminal charges there. We know as well that in Georgia, Fannie Willis, as a part of her sweeping indictment, similarly has charged the fake electors in that state for a similar events conduct. We know, too, that the attorneys general in New Mexico and Arizona also conducting investigations of these same kinds of things. All of these, again, coming apart of the criminal state process, not the federal process. Federal government may also be looking at this. But here in Wisconsin, just this past week, 10 individuals who posed as electors here settled a civil case on Wednesday that admitted their actions were part of an effort to overturn President Joe Biden's victory, those still not criminal prosecutions here in the state of Wisconsin. Those remain to be seen, whether that happens in Wisconsin and these other states as well. But all of those coming out of grand juries happening just this past week. Stay with us for the second portion of our Saturday morning broadcast when we turn to the future of America in the United States and our states throughout our nation.
Broadcasting to Waukesha at 101.1 FM.
Broadcasting to Southeast Wisconsin at 540 AM.
This is The Shaw, WAUK. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Listening to The Shaw, WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.